Blog Talk Radio.
But they want you to just say, to hell with it, I'm not going to participate. That's what they're hoping for. It's not going to work. It is not going to work. Stay strong. Find new voters. Get them to the polls. Like I said, and I'll continue to say, it is pitchfork and torches time in America.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Got up. Sorry we missed the Facebook Live this morning, but wasn't a whole lot I could do on that. That was Facebook's doing. But anyway, welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Once again, this is not my radio show. This is our show. This is where we speak up on the issues nobody wants to talk about. This is where we get down to what's really ailing America. Everybody's opinion is welcome here. This is not a anti-black, anti-white, anti-police channel. This is where we have that hard conversation and that tough dialogue. Everybody's opinion is welcome here. The police chief, the mayor, the pastor, they're all equal to the least of these. Nobody's titles matter in here. This is where we have the real talk. We can differ on opinions and we can differ on solutions, but the one thing we all celebrate is if we're all here, we see that there's a problem. We're here to grow and learn from each other, and each week I try to grab topics that are relevant to the community and rebuilding police and community relations. And this week, though, I have a topic that's particularly of importance to police officers, because this is something that we see all the time and we hear talked about in medium-sized and larger departments. It's called the good old boy system. And, you know, some of you might wonder, well, how do I know if we have a good old boy system in place? Ask the officers. You know, some of them may be honest with you and tell you that there is a good old boy system. And what the good old boy system is, it's a select group of officers and administrators who may have personal things in their lifestyles where they get along and they all bond and they do things together. But the good old boy system, discipline isn't dealt out the same. Some officers can get away with things where other officers can't. It's not necessarily built upon racial lines. It's built upon a group of officers or administrators who feel that they're elite. And so they select and pick people and gravitate them into the group, and then they become the select few. And this really affects how we police the public. It also affects how we deal with each other at work, how we interact with each other at work. You know, you'll get a lot of administrators that'll say, well, I don't know if we have a good old boy system here. Well, you know, all you got to do is look at certain entities within your department. You know, look at the makeup of your city and then look at the demographics of your department. You know, if you don't have that many Hispanic officers and you don't have that many black officers, then you may have a good old boy system. You know, if you don't have that many female officers, you might have a good old boy system. If you've got specialized units that are mostly comprised of all white officers, you might have a good old boy system. And people can say, well, you know, there's not that many black officers or female officers or Hispanic officers putting in for these particular positions. Go deeper than that and ask why they're not. Ask about that workplace. Maybe they don't want to be in that environment, you know, so that impacts how the community ultimately is served. You know, the good old boy system is alive and well in policing. And it's not fair to a lot of applicants, because the good old boy system can affect them where we get good applicants that can put in, but they just don't seem to make the cut. But then you find out somebody's sister, somebody's brother, somebody's son, somebody's cousin is hired. You know, and they're in. And then as soon as they're hired, the next thing you know, their wife or their husband has some position somewhere. You know, the nepotism that goes on. And this is a problem in policing. It frustrates officers because some officers have to walk around on pins and needles because you don't fit into the good old boy system. And, you know, in thinking about the good old boy system, there were two people that came to mind, particularly for me. And one of them, we just heard the president pardon him, and that's Sheriff Joe Arpaio. So we're going to talk a little bit about Sheriff Joe Arpaio first, and then we're going to get to everybody's favorite sheriff, Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark. And this is according to Wikipedia, so you guys can Google Joseph Michael Arpaio on Wikipedia, and everything that I'm saying, that I'm reading off here, you can have access to. You know, it says he was born in June 14th of 1932. In 2010, he became a flashpoint for opposition to Arizona's Senate Bill 1070, an anti-illegal immigration law, which was largely struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. Over the course of his career, Arpaio has been the subject of several federal civil rights lawsuits. In one case, he was a defendant in a decade-long lawsuit in which a federal court issued an injunction, barring him from conducting further immigration roundups. We all know how that turned out. He continued to do these roundups, which ultimately led to him being arrested and convicted and then pardoned by 45. You know, a federal court subsequently found that after the order was issued, Arpaio's office continued to detain persons for further investigation without reasonable suspicion that a crime has been or is being committed. You know, the good old boy system. There it is. You know, so, you know, we're going to use that term. So I'm going to go with what Merriam-Webster's dictionary defined. What is the term good old boy? We hear it all the time. So I don't want people to say, well, that's what black people think it is, or that's what white people think it is. We're going to go by what Merriam-Webster's definition of the good old boy system is. And it says, usually white southerner who conforms to values, culture, or behavior of his peers. You know, I'm going to say the good old boy system, it comes in all colors. And it's not just limited to the South. We see a whole lot of that, you know, in a lot of the northern police departments. But anyway, if we get back to Sheriff Arpaio, it says in a separate racial profiling case, which was concluded in 2013, Arpaio and his subordinates were found to have unfairly targeted Hispanics in conducting traffic stops. So let's hear how Sheriff Arpaio racial profiled.
In fact, the accusation is that the most important one is racial profiling.
That's not true. And let me tell you something.
The Department of Justice believes that.
Yeah.
District Judge believes
that. They taught us how to do that. The U.S. government taught my deputies how to enforce the illegal immigration law. They are the ones that trained. They're the ones that gave the authority. They're the ones that have, and every audit said you're doing the right thing.
So you never direct your officers to stop people simply because of the way they
look? No way. And we don't do it. We are not racist.
You've never done that?
No. Never.
You never given the order of stopping someone simply because they have an accent?
Never. Never.
Simply because they speak Spanish?
That's correct. Never.
Not because of the color of the skin?
No. I don't do that. We don't racial
profile. You say you don't do that, but you've been exactly accused of that.
Enforce the laws I took an oath of office to do.
Now, that's Sheriff Joe Arpaio. You know, they don't racial profile. He's never targeted Hispanics. Well, Department of Justice found otherwise, you know, and I believe ultimately that's what he was convicted of. But that's the good old boy system. That's the denial of it. You know, enforcing laws mean equal among everybody. In regards to the illegal immigration bill, you know, the last time I checked, you know, we've got a lot of illegal Russians in this country. We've got a lot of illegal Canadians in this country. We've got people from all over Europe. We've got illegal Asians in this country. We've got illegal people from Africa in this country. But we only seem to be focusing on Mexico. You know, Mexico is not the all-encompassing problems of America. But, you know, that's what we get with the good old boy system of policing when it comes out of the department and it comes out into the street. You know, let's hear from Joe Arpaio on how he feels about arrest.
Let's get straight to the racial profiling, because that does seem to be the heart of where this is heading now. The Justice Department, in the suit, what the DOJ has said is that Latino drivers are between 4 and 9 times more likely to be pulled over by your officers. But only about 30% of the population of Maricopa County is Latino. So when it looked at that way, it seems clear that there's racial profiling going on.
Well, that's their opinion. Now we're going to be in court, and we'll be able to put the true facts out on the table. That is their opinion, which, by the way, last month they had their big press conference saying they're taking me to court, which is very convenient. We're in an election year. They knew the 1070 was coming out. The president announced his new program last week on the kids. So what is this, all politics? The timing is very very interesting when you talk about illegal immigration.
Well, what do you say the numbers are?
On what?
In terms of racial profiling. Or how you're saying that the numbers do not support racial profiling.
No, it does not. We arrest anybody that violates the law. We don't care where they're from. It just happens we're close to the border, and a lot of the people coming in come from Mexico.
Wow. Hey, once again, that's Sheriff Joe Arpaio. We arrest anyone, and you can't argue with the numbers that are there. You know, I just think when we see things like this, especially in the climate today where, you know, we try to rebuild police-community relations, and you got a community that's willing to listen, willing to tune in, willing to educate themselves, and you got people like that that get pardoned, you know, for what's obvious, as to even the news reporters are looking at and calling it profiling. He says it wasn't. He was convicted of it. He got pardoned by the president. So, you know, hopefully Joe Arpaio can go into that sweet by and out of the political circle. But I'm quite sure they'll keep him up on a platform. Now, we're going to move a little bit more to the east and a little bit up north. And we can talk about everybody's favorite sheriff, David Clark. And if you guys want to call in, got any questions, the number is 646-716-4621. And then just press 1. We'll get you on. Like I said, this is Barbershop Talk. When you guys call here, you know, you're in the conversation. We don't cut it short. We're not going to let you make a soundbite and leave. You're in the conversation, and you know, we're going to go ahead and get into a conversation. So let's talk about Sheriff Clark. Okay. In 2015, Sheriff Clark received a citation for a statement that he made in a podcast. This is what Sheriff Clark said. This is a quote, and this is from Wikipedia also. Quote, "Let me tell you why blacks sell drugs and involve themselves in criminal behavior instead of a more socially acceptable lifestyle. Because they're uneducated, they're lazy, and they're morally bankrupt. That's why." Unquote. Sheriff David Clark. I mean, this guy, I don't quite understand what planet he actually came from. Now, I don't know him personally, but background, he's got an excellent background. He's obviously an intelligent man, but I mean, the statements that he makes are bombastic. They're crazy on their face value, and people lend credence to this guy. Maybe his heart is in the right place, but his mind is somewhere else. You know, Sheriff Clark, you know, he's got this thing with Black Lives Matter, and they're a hate group, and they're this and that. He's entitled to that opinion. If that's the way he feels, I don't have a problem with that, but I'm going to say, Sheriff Clark, I haven't heard you mention anything about the KKK. I haven't heard you mention anything about, you know, the white supremacy movement. You've been kind of mute on that point. You know, we haven't heard anything at all from you. And you know, Lord knows there's been enough on your plate to deal with. Let's talk about, let's see, Sheriff Clark has harshly criticized various black critics for police abuses. He's called former Attorney General Eric Holder an asshole. This is a public official, a sheriff, and accused him in testimony before the State Judiciary Committee of outright hostility towards police. Now, just because people choose to question what we do or how we do it or give suggestions on how we can do it better, that's not outwardly being hostile. We got to get away from that thing where we're not able to be approached. Tiffany, you're exactly right. Intelligence doesn't mean smart. You know, we got to get away from that approach and got to be open. You know, Sheriff Clark, let's see, what I got about Sheriff Clark. Okay, this is from 2014, but this is one of Sheriff Clark's election commercials. Now, bear in mind, Sheriff David Clark is a Democrat in a mostly large black portion of Milwaukee County. Okay, now, he runs as a Democrat, and why these people keep voting for him, I don't know, but he goes to Republican-only forums and preaches against Democrats. So I don't understand. Maria says, the government dismantled the black power, but the KKK organization is driving. Wonder why that is. Well, Let's listen to Sheriff David Clark.
So once we reconnect black people with their history, and which is what I've been trying to do, their eyes will open and they'll see that they've been hoodwinked by this monolithic voting for Democrats. Nothing has gotten better under Democrat control of the black.
Now, that's in regards to his feelings on what black people need to do to get connected with our history. And he says that he's the one that can do it. He's the one that's going to bring us back into focus and teach black people what we need to do and how we need to become better citizens. Okay? He had a complaint filed on him by a gentleman, and we're going to go through some of his stuff, by a gentleman who was on an airplane, and Sheriff David Clark apparently had some Dallas Cowboy attire on, and this guy said something to him in regards to his attire, and this was his reaction.
Right now at 5, Milwaukee County's highest-ranking Cowboys fan responds after a man says Sheriff Clark had him unlawfully detained because of a comment about football. The sheriff was decked out in Cowboys gear on Sunday while sitting on an airplane, and he did not like it when one man questioned him about his outfit.
Now, our Casey Geraldo joins us live at the Milwaukee County Courthouse with more on these comments and the legal implications of the sheriff's statement. Casey.
That's right, Stephen Carroll. The bottom line here is a local criminal defense attorney tells me if Sheriff Clark were to knock someone out like he says he may, if they approach him in a similar way to what happened on Sunday, he could face battery charges and some jail time.
They may get knocked out. That's the threat coming from Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark Wednesday after this man filed a complaint with the county, saying he had a bizarre run-in with the sheriff Sunday.
I say, oh, are you Sheriff Clark? And he says, yeah. And I was surprised that he was wearing Dallas Cowboys gear.
Dan Black says he shook his head at the sheriff.
From behind me, he asked me if I have a problem, and I turn around and shake my head. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to start conflict.
Milwaukee attorney Matthew Meyer says if that's what really happened, it's not grounds for knocking someone out.
What is that unlawful interference? And I don't think that there was one, and so therefore you can't claim self-defense when you go attack someone for shaking their head at you.
Sheriff Clark says in his statement about the airplane incident that next time he or anyone else pulls this stunt on a plane, they may get knocked out. He says he reserves the reasonable right to preempt a possible assault. But Meyer...
Now, I'm just going to leave that one and let y'all stew on that as Sheriff David Clark. Let's talk about, Terrell Thomas. The Milwaukee County Jail turned the water off to an inmate, Terrell Thomas, cell, resulting in his death by dehydration on April 24, 2016. According to inmates, the water was turned off for 6 days, and the staff refused to provide water to Thomas. On September 15, 2016, the Milwaukee medical examiner ruled Thomas's death a homicide. Later that day, Sheriff Clark's office sent out a press release which stated it would be withholding employee internal investigations and will not be commenting on this matter until the completion of all investigative and review processes, which is cool. I understand that. Asked about the lawsuit in March of 2017, Clark said that he had no comment on the lawsuit but noted Thomas's criminal background, i.e., character assassination. Let's not deal with the issue at hand. This man's basic torture in that county jail. Let's talk about what he did in the past, which if I'm adding this up right, he's currently in jail, so I'm assuming that he's paying for whatever he did. But let's keep trudging that up and not talk about the death of what happened to him. Let's go talk about another episode of death over there in that prison, the death of a newborn and the shackling of a pregnant woman. Clark's department has come under fire for its restraints on a pregnant woman inmate. The controversial practice has been abolished or restricted by at least 10 states and has been prohibited by Wisconsin Department of Corrections as well as by the Federal Bureau of Prisons. In 2014, a woman who was handcuffed and shackled for 21 hours while in labor sued the county. A second lawsuit was filed by another woman who was shackled while giving birth and while hospitalized for prenatal care and postpartum treatment. The suit contends that the jail has a blanket policy of shackling all hospitalized inmates, regardless of their criminal or medical history, and that at least 40 women were shackled in this manner. In June of 2017, a federal jury awarded $6.7 million in lawsuits by a woman who accused the Milwaukee County jail guard of raping her on at least 5 occasions while she was 19 years old and pregnant. Criminal charges of sexual assault had been dropped against the guard after he pled no contest to lesser charges. In July of 2016, a pregnant inmate at the jail with serious mental illness went into labor and the newborn baby died. The mother filed a federal lawsuit against the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. She was denied medical attention before her pregnancy, but medical appointments were canceled, and she received prenatal vitamins only once and was laughed at by guards after going into labor. This death and others at the jail prompted calls for Clark's resignation from a county supervisor and several Democratic state legislators. In 2006, Clark invited members of an evangelical Christian organization, the Fellowship of Christian Centurions, to speak at several mandatory employee meetings, at which the group members proselytized. Several deputies complained that Centurions proselytizing, but Clark refused to stop the presentation. The Sheriff's Deputies Union and two individual sheriff's deputies, a Catholic and a Muslim, successfully sued Clark in the United States Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Clark appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, which upheld the lower court's ruling in 2009. The sheriff did not review in the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, I mean, we could just keep going. I mean, some of this stuff on him, I mean, guys, it's out there. But this is the good old boy system. This is policing. This is the type of policing that communities see out there. You know, I posted a deal with an officer out of SAPD up on my face, and it was great to see an officer doing, you know, good things. And I don't always like to harp on the bad, but some of these things we got to post. But, I mean, this guy was out there enforcing traffic for years till he retired. Never had a complaint. You know, writing tickets and people thanking him. You know, I'm all for the good stuff, and I'm all for, you know, bringing these officers to light. And I've tried to call, and I'm working to get that gentleman, he's retired now, to get him on the show, Alton Simmons, to get him on the show to where he can talk about, you know, the positive things in policing and how we can move things forward and give some examples how we do it. But people like these guys are detrimental to building and fostering good police relationships. You can't target demographics and pockets of people, poor people, Hispanic people, black people, you know, homeless people, and then say, well, why aren't we trusting this police? Why are we getting so much negativity? We get it sometimes because we're not embracing that public. We're not talking to the public. And I'm not saying every officer out there. I'm saying that a lot of the policies that officers have to operate underneath are not good policies. You know, some officers are getting days off. Some officers get terminated for things that other officers are allowed to just continue down the road with. Get a pat on the back, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it. These things impact police morale. And when the officers are not happy, when the officers see these internal good old boy systems, it's going to go out and impact how they react with the public. And when they go out in the public, they're representing that department. So if the officer's not happy and the officer's got pressures and you got a good old boy system in effect, where the officer sees people around him get a treatment or something that he's not getting or she's not getting, you know, then that officer's going to react. Who bears the brunt of that? The public does. And the public doesn't know why this is happening this way or why this is happening that way. You know, I often say, get to know the officers that work in your area. Get out the car. Talk to these guys and these ladies. Meet them personally. Build a bond with them. Not all officers are bad. A lot of officers, really, they want that dialogue. They just don't really know how to quite do it. Get these young officers. Talk to them. Meet them. Go into your police department. Find the sergeant that works the area. Talk to him or her. You know, find the commander that's over the area. Sit down and meet with the chief, not just when there's a problem, because some of these police chiefs, I'm going to tell y'all, you got to bring them kicking and screaming out of their offices into the public. You know, going to city council meetings and being all over TV at social events, that's not interacting with the public. That's going to a social event. You know, go to some of these parks. Go eat lunch in some of the schools. Get out, chiefs, and get out there and be police officers instead of politicians. I understand that you've got a different set of responsibilities in your job, but you can't be disconnected from the community and then tell the officers to go out there and foster good community relations. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest problems that line officers, street officers are taking hits on are disconnected police administrators. And the good old boy system, it extends through the police department into your city government, and it's just a network. And so is everybody treated the same? No. Are all citizens treated the same? No. and neither are the officers. You know, there's varying degrees of how people feel and how they interact with this, you know, especially in the department and how we interact with each other. We're all going to have cliques and everything on our jobs. That goes without saying. But if we can't have tough talk in the police department and recognize, hey, you know, Chief, did you know there's some people who think there's a good old boy system in this department? Oh, I've been here for 15 years or 20 years, or I've never seen it. Well, because you're part of it. You know, it's amazing how the people who are part of the problem never see a problem. You know, they're just, well, I don't see, you know, what's going on or whatever. Talk to your officers. You know, if you're the chief of police, but you don't, the officers don't ever see you until there's something major going on, there's a problem. If you're the chief of police or an assistant chief and the community never sees you until you're invited to a meeting because half the town is on fire, there's a problem. You know, it's just like the fire department. You know, we all like the fire department. They're cool people, but don't none of us want to see the fire department at our house. Because you come home and that big red truck is out there, that means something, you know, not everything is good at the house. So it's the same way with these police administrators. When you're detached away from your officers and you're not hearing them, you don't allow them to speak, then guess what? When they see you, they automatically feel like it's something bad. That's the good old boy system. The network of folks who work with them, and they're quick to tell what everybody else does, but they never tell all the bad stuff that's going on up top. You know, like I said, the call-in number is 646-716-4621. If anybody has a question, comment, or concern, they can chime in. I know I've got Tyrone K. Dunmore, you know, on the line listening. That's my ace in the bullpen. If you want to weigh in, Ty, feel free to weigh in. I believe I got Charlie also on the line. Charlie, if your mic is open, if you want to weigh in, feel free to weigh in.
Well, good morning, Stan. How you doing? I'm outside the train station, so if you hear a little construction in the background, that's what it is. Good topic. Nobody usually wants to address the old boy network, and it's not just in southern cities. It's in cities all over the country. Any municipality and any place where employees help out each other. As we know, certain police departments around the country, they've had generations of families that have served, fire departments too, city workers. It's just very, very difficult, I think, to break into it, because once you have a person with a certain kind of mindset and they already believe that people are not up to them, or I should say, that they're better than them, you're not going to really change their feeling. I was watching YouTube earlier this morning, and this older white gentleman was talking about the removal of Confederate statues. And he said, I don't understand what the point is, because, you know, we're just going to take statues from every place. We're going to even take down Martin Luther King. And then he caught himself. Well, he said, I'm like, you're talking about racism, but it's already still inbred in you, probably from what your father taught you, his father taught him, and family members. So that's what we have to deal with. And how could you deal with that mindset? We all say education and everything like that, but sometimes education is not enough. You have to actually put that person in a similar situation that other people of color have gone through, and let them, I guess you could say, experience the discrimination from another point.
You know, Charlie, I see your point, but you know, I think that we shouldn't have to even get. I agree, but we shouldn't have to get to that point. I mean, if I see someone jump off a building, I don't need to go up there and jump off to see that it's dangerous. You know, we have to be able to see when something happens to someone else that it can also happen to us. But I think oftentimes, you know, like I alluded to on another radio interview that I did, in America is reactive in that we're content with things happening to somebody else. Then when it happens to us, then we want to react to it. You know, whether it's the war on drugs that is now a health concern, whether it was police brutality and police training, and now a woman from Australia was killed, so now police need better training. You know, everything just goes in a cycle. And it's just you got a demographic of people who are usually poor and people of color, or poor and white even, that just when they're victims of these problems, nothing happens until it reaches out and snatches the right people. And some of them can be black people who are wealthy. But once it extends out and bites people, then everybody wants to say, well, we need change, you know. But they don't want to have this talk. And that's that good old boy network. It extends further than police departments. It extends into your entitled people. I mean, Charlie will get a ticket for what the city manager probably won't get a ticket for. Why not?
Well, you know, and I think a lot of people don't understand also it has to deal with educational institutions also. My mother and father raised me with the fact is you have to be 2-3 times as better as the next person. Because the fact is, they're looking to eliminate you. And even if we do go to the Harvards, to the Yales, even sometimes our historically black colleges, we will discriminate against our own because we're not the right color, or we're too dark, or we're too light, or we weren't brought up in the right neighborhood or something. But with the old boy network, sometimes we do it to ourselves also. And if you can grab 1,000 Kappas that were part of the NFL march that was held in front of the league's headquarters, then why can't we do it for the problems that are going on in Detroit? Why can't we do it for the kids that are not getting the quality education that other neighborhoods are getting in their communities? The old boy network, yes, it's still around, but the thing about it is, what are we doing to break it up? We don't go to the voting booth like we should, or sometimes we'll just go because the fact is we think that this candidate is going to represent us. But we don't really pay attention to sometimes of the issues or sometimes the writing on the wall.
I think, Charlie, too, a lot of it is education. I think that there's a demographic, and particularly in this country, that wants us to stay divided. They want us to stay at each other's throats. Police against the community, black against white, Christian against Muslim. They enjoy watching us fight. They don't want us to talk. Yes, we got differences. I drive a Chevy, you may drive a Ford. But they don't want us to sit down and have that hard talk. You know, I got one of my Facebook Live people here, Tiffany. You know, she's saying a lot of what she sees is the good old boy system is exactly what was stated. Many people are taught down the line. What's worked before, now, what worked before, now mindset, it applies to the good old boy system. And with it, what I've seen, the majority of white supremacy, yeah, it keeps getting worse. But see, Tip, I agree. We are not learning. We have to understand and learn these white supremacist movements. Then once we learn that, we'll learn that not all white people are white supremacists. You know, some people may have a Southern culture that may disagree with my Northern culture, but that doesn't necessarily make that person, you know, a white supremacist. We got to go deeper and develop friendships. We got to be able to talk to people. You know, the white guy that does your taxes is not your white friend. That's your tax guy. You know, the black guy who, you know, cuts your grass is not your black friend. That's your lawn guy. The Hispanic guy that cooks at your favorite Mexican restaurant is not your Mexican friend. That's the guy that works the restaurant. We got to go deeper and sometimes be open to say, you know, I'm not here to represent my race. I'm not here to represent my profession. I'm here to represent my value systems or my beliefs or how I see something. But with these white supremacist groups, everybody's running around acting like these people just sprung up out of nowhere and that they're just here. And no, they're not here all of a sudden. They've been here. You know, we just now, America's waking up to it going, oh, my God, I had no idea it was this bad. Well, I'm going to tell you flat out why America's knee-jerk reacted, because they saw a bunch of white people fighting a bunch of other white people on TV. If that would have been Black Lives Matter on the other side, side, I don't think it would have gotten the neo-Nazis and all those people would have gotten the negative publicity that they got, not to the extreme that they got it, but it was the optics of everybody viewing and seeing what was going on. And we got to educate ourselves. It's like I said, how many people know what their decals look like, what their stickers look like, what their symbols look like, what their signs look like? That's the stuff we need to be educating each other on. We got Facebook, share this stuff, you know, and we got to learn to look out for each other, but we got to educate ourselves and have a forum where we can talk and not get your feelings hurt. You know, white people have some opinions of black people and why we do certain things, and I may look at it and say, well, that's wrong, and they shouldn't feel that way about me, but then I also have to recognize that we got some brother that's out here perpetrating a stereotype that is negative of how black people will be viewed, and I don't say anything to him, then I can't blame that person for having the view that they have. And we've got some black folks who will see a white guy in some overalls with a piece of straw out of his mouth and a cowboy hat on, and some will look at it, he's a racist. You know, that guy may have a black wife at home. We don't know, but we just in America, we look at people, and we've got them all figured out. I don't need to know him. I already know how he is. And we got to get out of that and meet people. And that's what we're so afraid of. We're afraid what our friends will think if we're seen talking to a white person or a black person. What will the coworkers think? You know, I mean, I'm approachable. I like talking to people. You know, I like interacting with them. If I disagree with them, I disagree with them. If they disagree with me, they disagree with me. But we, in this country, we're going to have to talk. We don't talk until something dramatic happens. When 9/11 happened, we were all hugging each other. We were all equal that day. When the boogeyman was coming, boy, everybody was under the bed together. Then as soon as everything, you know, got settled down, we went right back into our little divisive camps of blaming each other. And that good old boy system sits back and keeps us divided, keeps us against each other, keeps us at each other's throats.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And every time I look at the makeup of the cabinet, you have our leaders that are out there, you know, well, he just doesn't get it. Well, he does get it, because the fact is, that's the way he was raised, what he was raised around. I hate to put it in racial terms, but he was raised around his own kind. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say Tyrone is wanted to weigh in here for a minute, but I got to give him his appropriate salute and prepare people for Tyrone. Come on and drop them bombs.
Well, I'm just going to... Good morning, people. I'm just going to add, kind of put the spices on what Charlie was just speaking about. And it's something I always tell people, and that's why I don't fault them. You know, we always look to blame people, but many people are racist or whatever they want to call themselves, and the different titles they have acquired through miseducation. I mean, they were, as you said, they were raised that way. They got it. I mean, racism, and you've heard the term many times before, it's many more educated people call it just what it is. It's institutionalized racism. See, when we think of the word institutionalized, we think of someone going to the nut house or somebody going into a prison. But what about the institutionalism that takes place with racism that has been taught, inbred, and inbred means raised, you breed, inbred, you also have this thing instilled. So if it's instilled, that means it's going to be hard to move because it's still, you've been programmed, and like any other program, it's hard to switch the program if you're stuck in the program. And as we use the phrase, brainwash. I don't like to use the word brainwash. I think brainwash is an oxymoron to what we're talking about. We've been brain dirty. So it's a form of incarceration which doesn't allow you to come out to expand to the outside world because you put this prison, you've allowed yourself to be imprisoned by this thing called institutionalized racism. And it affects the planet. It affects negatively our society, when though we're saying one thing out of one side of the mouth, but our actions speak other. And I think it's something like, as you put on your page, Brother Stan, about I can't believe what you say when I'm something like that, to, because I see what you do. But the thing is, how do you get to the root of it? First, you got to identify the crime. And the crime is misappropriate, miseducated, misinformed human beings who take on a mindset that has to be, and I can't say reverse, but we got to spend more time for the next generation, because a lot of people are so far gone with this thought process.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't think they, you know, and it's not that they can't change, but change is the hardest thing for people to do, is to change. So, again, I'm not upset with people who act that way, because I understand and I overstand why they're the way they are. And it doesn't pose a threat to me personally. And I think we spend too much time trying to reverse what is really a curse, because it definitely does not help us as a whole. I know we have some people who are religiously rooted, and I like to always refer, as you know me, I like to refer to at least a scripture or a quote or some passage that they consider so sacred, and that's fine with me. But I like to always go to the book of Ephesians, the 6th chapter, the 10th verse, where it says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God. Now, the whole armor of God, you know, as police officers, you put on body armor. Well, here we're told and we're instructed to put on our whole armor of God. Like, the body armor is just not good enough. You know, that protects a projectile penetrating and, of course, ultimately possibly murdering a law enforcement official. And that's why they wear body armor. But we're taught as a whole to put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles or wills of what they call the devil. And devil is nothing but, again, if you look at it in reverse and you put it in what's called the dyslexic state, go against the law the way they taught us how to now write and read, which is left to right, when it's really supposed to go right to left because time goes that way. You're looking at the word lived, thing has lived, and it's wrong, and it's not right, it's unfair, it's unjust, and we always hear that public cry. What is it? No justice, no peace. Though, as you said, the good old boy network is supposed to take an oath to serve and protect. But how can you serve and protect a system that's, as you say all the time, brother, inherently, we have inherited this corrupt system, because it puts, as you said, the police against the civilians, or even law enforcement, or that, and that's dividing. That's dividing. But let me finish on with this statement. And for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. So it's an internal struggle that goes within human beings, but against the principalities. What are these principles? Against powers. It's the powers that be, the people who are in positions of authority that execute this type of power, against the rulers of darkness. Because why? That's why it's behind the blue curtain. It's behind, as they call it, the black market. So it's said that what is hidden will eventually come out. What you do in the darkness will come out in the light. And now we're starting to shine the light into this darkness. But the darkness, of course, comprehended it not. I hope y'all know where I'm going with this. And so now we're shedding light into this darkness, that, like you said, this hard talk, these things that people don't want to talk about. But what is it is? It's against spiritual wickedness. Why is it spiritual? It ain't nothing to be spooked out about. It's what you're doing with your spirit, what you're doing with your energy, with your electricity, which is your electrical body, which it corrupts our very soul. So we become, the soul is the emotional body. The physical body is the condensed, or the what we call the costume, the human costume. So as an officer, yes, you put on body armor, but we're directed to put on the whole armor to fight against these principalities of darkness. against these powers that be. And all those powers that be are things that we've been set up under, which is a five-pointed star, which is where with the original slash police officers would wear a five-pointed star. You follow? And that five-pointed star is indicative of the 5 points of attack that we're under attack every day. Politics is just another form of division. Polytheism, which is many different religions and broken up in their own divisions, it still don't bring people together. Philosophy is dealing with theories and fiction against facts. Psychology is a certain mindset that is put in place. And, of course, penal system. Mind you, they all start with the P's. This goes back to ancient Babylon. And if you read and do some research on policing, you'll find out they were first goes all the way back to what they call the medieval times. They were called the medieval knights. They had a coat of arms. Let's break that down. Medieval. If you look at the word medieval, you'll see the word mid, you'll see the word die, and you'll see the word evil right in the word medieval. And that badge was worn over the heart, which was to protect the heart. But the heart has been corrupted, and this is why when officers go out there and do things that goes against nature, which is inherently natural, which is to serve and protect and be a civil servant, because you take the oath to serve and protect your fellow citizens, because you yourself are a citizen. You're a public servant. And when you go against that, what happens? Now you struggle. And that's why you hear a lot of times they will say, well, we need sensitivity training or retraining because the heart has been tainted. The heart has been tainted. And they take that position and they go from being a civil servant, being a servant of the citizens of their community that they swore or they took the oath to serve and protect. Now they are people now that certain ones, not we know the majority do a great job, but this is the problem. And it goes deep into the heart, and it's hard to change the heart when the heart has been hardened by the hardened misinformation that has been fed from the time they were young. So I would say we have to do more of a job of making sure the next generation doesn't get this virus, doesn't get this poison, so that they, when they take that oath, they go out there and they properly serve with pride. I know it's a difficult job. It's a very dangerous job. But if you don't want to deal with the heat, then get out the kitchen. Don't even go in the kitchen.
Amen.
Okay.
Hey, I got another caller on here. This is my brother, Nick Novello. He's probably, I don't know if he's at the job or not, but he called in to join us because we're talking about people who take the fight and recognize the separation, the good old boy system, and not just folks who post about it, but folks who do something about it. Nick, can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning, brother. I appreciate you getting here, man. Drop some knowledge in here with us.
Well, you know, I'm listening to your guest speak, and very astute man, making a lot of valuable points. You know, to add to that for a moment, you know, Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart of man is desperately wicked. Desperately wicked to begin with. In fact, you know, just for clarification, the word in the Hebrew is anash. It means incurable. So we begin with a man who's broken and lives in sin, and we attempt to police ourselves. That man becomes a police officer with no checks and balances. And, you know, what we're seeing in our country today is the fruition of no checks and balances, people allowed to do law enforcement carte blanche, not accountable to the people. And so, you know, what really shocks me is when Obama was president, we had conversations that we needed to be more transparent, more accountable. So I began to feel a sense of celebration. And, you know, when Trump assumed office, I thought we're going to go that way now. There'll be more accountability, more transparency. The citizens will begin to trust us knowing we work within constitutional context. But the complete opposite has happened. We're seeing heinous incident after heinous incident where the cops are not only not disciplined, but they're put back on the job after they're investigated for work that is not only outside any constitutional context, but for work that in many instances can be construed as criminal. It's very chilling, Stan, where we're going right now in the country.
You know what, Nick? You're right. I got a friend of mine, good friend of mine. I'll just say she's in law. I'm not going to identify who she is because she works in a very political environment, and I don't want to bring heat on anybody. But she recently tested for a position, and she scored high enough to be there. And it was really funny because I was talking to her, and they selected all around her and not her. And then when she asked them about it, you know, you've got a ranking system. Their reply was, well, you know, the ranking system is more like a guideline. I mean, What is this woman supposed to do? She studies, she's qualified, she's there. But see, this is that good old boy system that just kicked her to the curb just to move somebody in that they want. You know, and this kind of stuff is what aggravates a lot of people.
Oh, not understanding, and it ought to, because the quintessential example of the good old boy system really can be viewed in the demographics of Ferguson, Missouri. You have a citizenry there that I believe is 80% minority, and then you have a police department that's, what, 98% Caucasian. It's astounding.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we allow these things to happen. But I'll say this, Stan. There's a lot of culpability. There's enough blame to go around. But, again, you've heard me say it repeatedly. I do come out and speak very aggressively against black and brown clergy. They know what's happening, and they remain silent. And they should be speaking into their culture, their biblical mandates, not only to proclaim the gospel of Christ, but they have a mandate to say, wait a minute, this is wrong. This is not representative government. Let me talk to representative government, Stan, for just one moment here, and I'm referring to this House Bill 81 in Texas. Last year, there was this House Bill 81 to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana to enhance, I believe, the medicinal applications of cannabis. So the people, by and large, were for it, Stan. The legislation, or the legislators in this instance, were for the most part for it. Now, what happens? It took one man in the Texas House to circumvent the will of the people and the will of his colleagues. He kept that bill from going to the floor. What's most chilling is that one man with a time constraint killed a matter of life and death. And then when people tell me, well, see, Nick, the system works. Well, what are we really saying here, Stan? We're saying that the system was rigged and is rigged in Texas to circumvent the will of the people, and that's what we do to one another, and we allow it. We remain silent.
And, you know, and we don't do ourselves any justice when we don't vote, and people can vote for who they want to vote for. I've got my political opinions like everybody else does. But a lot of people will sit back. You know, you brought up Ferguson, and I agree with you 100%. But I'm also going to say, you know, in regards to Ferguson, if they say, you know, well, our police department is 80-85% white. Before their last elections, you know, they had their city council was all white. The mayor was white. Well, I mean, these people ran and won an election. I'm thinking if you got a city that's 70-80% black, and yet all your representatives are white, either you voted them in or you didn't vote. In either way, you really don't have a say-so. You know, I mean, when I talk about the good old boy system, you know, look at the two examples I gave. Sheriff, well, now criminal and pardon, Sheriff Joe Arpaio and Sheriff David Clark. Why is it that these two guys, who, and this is my personal opinion, who to me are outwardly, they have racial issues, I'll say, in how they, to me, how they do their job. That's how I view, based upon what they say, based upon Sheriff Clark, who doesn't have any credibility in the African-American community from what I've seen all over Facebook. But yet, when you say sheriffs in America, these two people are held up by a demographic of people, mostly those who are wealthy and in charge, as examples of how policing should be done. So I look at what they do and what they say, and Sheriff Clark spends more time putting black people down than building black people up. Sheriff Arpaio wants to just lock up all Latinos, and that's the extent of what he wants to do. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm not for immigration control and controlling the borders, but these are the two platforms that these two people that are demographic in this country holds up as examples for law enforcement that are detrimental to black and brown people at the cost of war. So they can grandstand. They can go up to Trump Tower. They can sit with the president. That's crazy, you know?
I agree with what you're saying, Stan. I do. We simply don't have any reference points for where we are right now. We're in a slow devolution. Some would argue it's a fast devolution. We're just moving away from the rule of law. And, you know, I always hearken back to the words of a man by the name of Carl Schmitt, who said that representative government was largely a sham. And then he went on to say that anyone put into a position of authority or power defines his friends, his enemies, marshals his resources, and he pushes his agenda. But we see that to be true. We really do. It all occurs within the veneer of representative government. So you go and you go to the polls and you cast your vote. You feel that you're having your say. In the end, what you're doing amounts to nothing, absolutely nothing. Because, again, we don't have any checks and balances. We have people that we know are agenda-driven, and they benefited themselves. You know, Stan, what really has always been a mind-boggling thing for me is that a guy or girl assumes office at the national level, and some years later, Stan, they're worth some millions of dollars. How did they accrue any monies as a representative of the people? It's just astounding.
It is. And Nick, you know, I watched when you went to the city council there, and I shared your video. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to tell you, and of course, you know, we talk all the time, but to me, for you, still a working officer, to go to the city council and lay it out like you did, and some people said, well, don't you feel that he embarrassed the city council? I said, well, if this stuff that he says is going on is going on and is factual, then what do they have to be embarrassed about? You know, I think the biggest part of leading with policing is, yes, you have this authority, you have this power, but sometimes ask people how they think you should use something or how they think you should do it. Ask them, if you were in my position, what would you do? Give people some control and submit to the people. We're public servants. We are not gods, no matter how people want to phrase. We're not gods. We are not judges. We are not the all-defining end result of what should or should not be. We're human beings. We're fallible. We were taught by a system which we're seeing is inherently fallible. We have not updated policing in this country in at least the last 55, 60, 70 years. Even your iPhone will tell you when it's time for an update. And then when you get people who recognize problems or are proactive and say, we need to change this, we need to do this, the troublemaker. Oh, that Nick Novello's a troublemaker. That Stan Mason's a troublemaker. They're trying to drum up a whole bunch of hostility. I'm not drumming up anything. I'm talking about what everybody on the street sees every day. Just because you're Johnny come lately and somebody pulled your ghost out of the closet, don't get all embarrassed about it, because policing as an institution has a lot of skeletons in its closet, and some of them still have meat on the bones. You know,
we
have to stop being afraid.
You're entirely right. One of the things that you touched upon, and to talk about the church for a moment, because there's context here, we know from its inception, the church's principal enemy has been deception. That's the principal tool of the devil. And interestingly enough, in two passages, Matthew 22:29, the Lord says, you do err. And the word err there is to be deceived. You do err in not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. And then you follow that with Matthew 24:4, where in response to all these questions about when would the end come and when will these things be, the Lord's response is, take heed lest you yourselves be deceived. And so it's occurring everywhere, but particularly in a cultural context and in law enforcement. Again, you know, I've been asked, Nick, do you think law enforcement in America over the last 40, 50 years especially has been used largely as a mechanism to control people? And Stan, I wish I could say otherwise, but you vet that question and you find that, yeah, it's been used, especially this war on drugs. What do you say, Stan, to the black man, to the brown man, who's done 20 years for possession of marijuana when in many states they've legalized it, and now you're having people become millionaires for the very thing that these guys did 20 years for? What do you say to them? How about our cultural fabric? How many millions of men can't market their wares because they carry the stigma of having done 20 years behind marijuana when we're getting ready to legalize it and make great money from it? What do you say to these men? Let me harken back. Finish that thought. Finish that thought with something Terrence Cunningham said last year. Remember we talked about that? At the time he said it, he was the chief of the International Police Chiefs Association, and he said, I want to apologize to black and brown America because we, police, had done some unspeakable things because of some of the bad laws on the books. And so what we've got is a tremendous cathartic moment because you know what, Stan? We haven't changed any of those laws. They're still on the books.
And they're going to stay on there because there's a segment of things, and I won't say that it's that police departments hide anything from the public, but I'll say that there's a lot of things the public doesn't know, and it's ignorance not by any of their choosing. There are certain things that once we walk out of that building and get to our cars, we don't think to talk about or we don't talk about. And so if we don't talk about it, the public doesn't know to ask. So there's a lot of things within police culture that officers know about that just are there. And so that's why I like to bring in opinions and have these dialogues where people can ask questions. You know, there are officers that operate under general orders or patrol guidelines, whatever, that the department makes up or that chief at a particular time and space within a department makes up. You know, how many of the community have read that? No, what general orders, not laws, state laws, but what policies, general orders, do those officers have? What are they broken down to? Do you have access to them? Do a public records release, Freedom of Information Act. Get them. Get a copy of it and read it. And know what the...
No, I agree.
It's going to amaze a lot of people to know what we can't talk about. You know, you may have a general order that says, I have to be open and honest with the public. Then there could be another general order that says that I am not allowed to say anything that brings discredit or disfavor upon the police department or the city. Okay, well, now Joe Citizen asked me a question. I'm supposed to be honest with Joe, but if I'm being honest, it's going to bring discredit or shame upon the department or the city. So I choose not to be honest with Joe, so I violated this general order to uphold this one.
That's correct.
Stan,
that's correct. That's why you and I have talked about that. You know, when you stand, and I would say to your listening audience, because I have a speaking engagement in a little bit, but I want to say this. All of this for me is subsumed under the need to be right with Christ. We're living in a very, very dysfunctional system right now. It can be argued, Stan, and I do, that it's a dying culture. We have turned our backs on the living God. Jeremiah 2:13 says, my people have committed two evils. They've turned their backs on the God of living waters. They've rejected the God of living waters, and they made for themselves cisterns that hold no water. And that's what we're doing. We're just doing things that bring no result. We're trying to affect result before a holy God, but we ourselves are not holy. So this holy God has made a provision for us in the person of his Son, and we continue to reject his Son to our own imperilment and to the demise of our own culture. But having said that, I'm going to go downstairs and speak. Stan, it's always a pleasure to hear you. And the gentleman that spoke before I did made some astounding points. Very well said. And so, again, God bless you, and we will talk shortly, my brother.
All right. Appreciate you, Nick, man. You be careful and have a good day.
Okay.
You know, all righty. You know, just to go back to some of what Nick is saying, you know, if I can say anything to the community, you know, a lot of officers right now, we're at a stage where some of us don't know what to do. Things are getting terrible out there. It's getting dangerous. Go out and meet these officers. Forget what everybody's political opinions are. Forget what your friends will think. Go meet one. Pick one that you think might listen to you and just say, hey, do you have a couple minutes? Can I talk to you? Yeah. And just tell them, let me tell you a little bit about me. And just have a dialogue with them. You don't know how much. That officer may not share a whole lot with you, but he's going to remember you, and they're going to carry what you're saying, and it may reflect over to the next person they deal with. You're going to have to learn your officers a little bit at a time. And officers, you got to get out of those cars. You got to stop being officer head and shoulders. You have to stop being the all-defining, all-encompassing answer to the problem and interact with the people. Sometimes you can say, well, this is what you need to do, but how, let's work on how we're going to do it. You know, let people be part of their own solution. Get in and learn your department. You know, that a lot of police departments have volunteer programs. You can get in there and learn. And some people are going to go, well, I don't want nothing to do with the cops. I hate all of them. Well, that's fine. If you don't want anything to do with them and you're not going to educate yourself on them, you're going to be always unarmed in a conversation because you don't know anything about what they do or how they do it. To a lot of the officers and police administrators, you know, stop going to these city council meetings being the all-encompassing answer to the problems in some of the communities that are challenged with crime when the fact of the matter is you haven't even been in those communities. You know, you never get out of your car and walk down the street in these communities. You don't even see your midnight truce. You don't know what goes on. Just because you're the chief doesn't mean you have all the answers. You know, get out and meet those officers who work the streets. Go over there and eat lunch in one of the elementary schools. Go over and just sit. If you can't play basketball, go over and just sit in the rec centers and watch some young brothers playing basketball. If you want to know what black people think or what Hispanic people think, go into the barbershops. Go in the beauty parlors. You don't have to get your hair cut. Just sit down and listen. You know, most of you sheriffs out there, you don't have a problem doing it when it's time to get votes. But then once you get voted in, that's a demographic of the community that just gets shoved aside. People want to be heard, and people are going to be heard. You know, there's shows like this that people can do it through. And if you mute people enough and you don't give them the opportunity to be heard, something's going to happen to where they're going to be seen. And once they're seen, the media will come in, and then they will be heard. But we got to have these hard talks. We got to have this hard dialogue. Charlie and Ty, you're still hot. So if y'all want to chime in, feel free. Well,
The only thing that I have to say, and with Tyrone and gentlemen you were talking about, I certainly do agree with. But the miseducation right now of our youth to think that things are going on the way that they are in this nation right now, we definitely have to look. And I have to bring up Charlottesville, the violence that happened there. And that's, you know, we have people that are basically not going to take it anymore. And personally, I agree. I agree with them. I think enough has been done. And if violence is shown to you, unfortunately, like Malcolm said, you know, you have the right to protect yourself. But the others that think that it's all right to, like your show's title is, the Good Old Boy Network, to keep squashing people underneath their soles of their feet, to make it like they're less than nothing. That is what I hope and I pray that this generation is, well, they're dealing with it now, but I hope that they deal with it in a more, constructive manner. It's really a damn shame. We know what the problems are, we know what the issues are, but still, people are taking their time about really doing something about it. And with shows like yours, shows like Tyrone's, Roberts, I mean, hopefully, I would like to see a whole network across the country finally take the ideas that people have been talking about for years and put them in action.
That's going to take effort, brother. I mean, if people aren't acting now or speaking up now, you know, what's it going to take to wake folks up? You know, sometimes we're worried about hurting people's feelings. And we're in a situation that's bad and it's not getting any better. You know, we're going to have to react at some point. in a proactive manner. You know, doesn't always have to be aggressive and fighting and a whole bunch of marching. I think we're not afraid to march, and folks aren't afraid to see us march. I think, you know, some of the people that the good old boy system, they're afraid to see black people and white people together and Hispanic people together, united, where politics isn't the issue, income isn't the issue. They're standing up against something because on its merits, it's inherently wrong. That's their biggest fear. But
I don't know if you saw earlier this week, they went back and they brought out Jim Brown. And as we know, Jim Brown, great, great running back for the Cleveland Browns, was a great all-around athlete, but was also known for his civil rights. And he basically said, even though Colin Kaepernick has the right to protest, he said he can't do it the way he did it against the American flag. Now, what I have to say about that, I'm a strong believer in the flag. My father fought for this country, as other relatives did, but didn't they also fight for our rights to be able to protest like Mr. Kaepernick? And also, why is it that the only way I could put it is this. Why is it that the senators, there was a guy from Queens Creole, whatever, maybe Tyrone might remember the song, and they talked about all these senators always sending kids to war, but them being senators, their sons did not have to go. When is this going to stop? If you have the balls enough to send somebody else's child to go fight overseas, then you should have your child leading by example.
Hey, Charlie, I got another caller that's calling in from the area code 404, the last four, 4727. Right now, you're on Behind the Blue Curtain. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, man. How y'all doing?
We're doing good. What's up?
Yeah, man, the thing with Jim Brown, it's kind of sad to see it. Honestly, Jim did a lot of good work, deserves a lot of respect for what he's done over his life. There's also the bad side of Jim as far as domestic violence and everything else. But there comes a time when we got to stop falling for certain tricks, and we have to stop letting them pit the young against the old. Older people are typically a little more conservative as far as how things should be expressed or how things should be done, because you get a little older, you get a little more safer. And they've always tried to pit the young against the old, and we end up in this situation where we have one person essentially doing the other side's business. Not because they're treasonous always, because I don't think Jim is anything like what we would term, some of these other folk, Herman Cain and whoever, but it acts in the same function. So there's got to be some type of idea of, look, publicly, united front. If we got something we need to hash out behind closed doors, disagreement, then, we do that. We set it up and we have somebody broker it, or we do it over the phone, whatever. But we don't air it publicly as far as disagreement. Publicly, just have a united front. I don't think that's much to ask. And I think we definitely have to get to that level. And this whole idea that just because a microphone is in front of you, you have to speak to every issue. Like, hey, sometimes no comment. Sometimes no comment works best. And you guys are hitting on some heavy stuff, but I think one thing I'm a little wary of right now is them constantly calling these alt-right and Nazi people, calling them white supremacists. No, these are aspiring white supremacists. White supremacists are the people on the corporate board, the people at your universities, and the people of high finance, people who have power and ability to affect people's lives. Those are real white supremacists. These people are not just foot soldiers and aspiring white supremacists. So I think we need to separate those two things, and also we have to be careful that tearing down symbols and making sure that certain symbols of disrespect aren't around. I think, it has some value, but we can't act like that's like an ultimate victory, because it's not. Essentially, that's what happened with Dylann Roof in South Carolina. After the massacre by that young murderer, they started removing Confederate flags in certain areas to kind of blow off some of the tension, to try to act, oh, we're healing, we're doing this, we're doing that. There's nothing tangible about that, nothing changed about the dynamic, that created the tension, they simply got away cheap by removing a symbol. So removing symbols, I understand. There's a value to it, but we do have to be careful about what we consider victories. But interesting conversation, man. I'm enjoying listening to you guys.
Well, you're still on because, like I said, when you come here, brother, this barbershop talking here, you know, none of us are definitive experts on this, and that's why I like to keep people on until they got to go, because I may say something that you want to counter or add to, or Tyrone may say something, and that's how people become, and we don't have conversations. And when we relegate people's opinions to sound bites, we're really kind of cutting our throats because we want solutions. And you're going to have the hard talk to have the solutions. And I think you're right, but I think with the young versus the old, I absolutely agree. But, you know, I spoke one time in a church and I said, you know, us old people who've been around and seen some things, you know, God gave us hindsight. But these young folks today, they have foresight. But the thing is, we don't ever get together and talk, so we don't have insight. You know, we don't know. We see the problem from our perspective. I'm 55. Okay, but I see it every day because I'm out there, you know, on the streets. But these young people see it not just in their present, but in their immediate future. At 55, you're at that sundown portion where you're seeing it and not much longer, whatever people, you know, think. But these young people are seeing this, and they see a sense of urgency. And then we say, well, do it like we did it. Do it like we did it. Well, if we did it right, we wouldn't be fighting the same battles today that we were fighting in the 60s. So let's take a little of what we did, a little bit of what they did, and say, you know, this torch is heavy. I got to pass it to this younger guy, but I got to teach him how to hold it. And then come together and work. I like what you said, man. We have to get together and come to a consensus. And when we look around that room, it's going to look like a South. There's going to be white folks sitting in there, Hispanic folks, Asian folks, black folks, American Indian, some rich folks, felons going to be sitting in there, police officers, preachers, politicians. You know, when we get to the root of the problem, it's affecting all of us. There's a privileged few, that good old boy system that we recognize and we all see it's there, but how do we fight it? You know, we fight it by educating ourselves. That's one of the things I like that you talked about. Simply removing the statue is not fixing the problem.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's heavy stuff because the hardest part about all the class divisions and racial divisions in America is at what point does one group opt out? We saw this with the populist movement and a few other movements to where you saw so-called diversity there. It ended up being I'll just say the white portion of that group waiting on the crumbs from the table, and if the crumbs were big enough, walking away from that coalition. Now,
right
now, what we're looking at, you have to say, when you see black folks out saying, okay, we're upset about this, these are our grievances, and you see the white working class acting as, you know, some kind of shield blocking, say, oh, that's not true, you're not doing this, you're not doing this. It's like, wait a minute, you guys got class issues and grievances yourself. You stepped out as a Tea Party and listed the things you were upset about. You didn't see black folks step out in front. No. The people who have problems with that upper class group who thinks that they should control how everybody else lives, they should be able to act out their movement in their own way. And we gotta come to some consensus on class to where you're working class just like I'm working class. What the hell are you doing trying to argue with me about my problems with Mr. Charlie over there? Like that's a crazy way of thinking, but it's American as hell.
Yeah, you're right. Because we're worried about just because you get rights doesn't mean I've lost anything. We seem to act like if somebody else is brought up to a standard of rights and the standard of living that is just and true that we proclaim, you know, in our Constitution, that somehow bringing these people up and giving them their constitutional rights is like we had to take some rights from you to give it to them, like you lost something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then we got folks that use patriot. You know, the word patriot has really been slanted and slandered because I don't really want to even meet any patriots because the folks I see throwing that word around the most always have the Nazi flag, always have the Confederate flag. So
yeah.
Patriot has become almost like a angry, threatening word. to me. It no longer means what it used to mean 5 or 10 years ago to me, just because of the optics
I
see when it's used.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I definitely get that one. And I would make the argument that that's just old jingoism wrapped up in a different way. So, back in the day, that was one way that they did it. But it's just a way of kind of covering yourself in the flag to where your intentions have to be good because you covered yourself in the flag, kind of a way of avoiding what you're actually advocating for. And when you go to social media and you see the guy with dad, father, Christian with an American flag next to his, as his avatar, man, that dude's probably going to say some hateful stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's typically what you're going to see now, which is crazy, but, it makes sense from what they're actually trying to do. Because in their own mind, they have to be good. They are the patriot, and you're the one trying to ruin everything for them. So, when you're caught up in that kind of dynamic, man, you can be whipped up into a frenzy over anything.
Exactly. Ty, you wanna weigh in, man? I'm at that 9-minute mark, brother. I got to get you in here.
Patiently listening to everybody, and Charlie brought up, Jim Brown, like you said, he's done and will continue to do the best he can with what he has. But we're in a new day and age, and younger brothers and sisters have to take the mantle. Because we ride what we consider our leaders till they're dead, literally. And when you talk about what he said, and back maybe 20, 30 years ago, it makes sense, but you got to upgrade. And this is no shot at the great Jim Brown. Number one, the flag that Colin Kaepernick, to make this clear again, please, people, do your research. That is not the American, original American flag. That is not what the premise of this country originally was under George Washington. The original flag was called the Pine Tree Flag. Go look it up. And on it, it had a pine tree, and it had a letters, a statement on it, appeal to God, an appeal to heaven. This was under the commission of George Washington. The flag that Colin Kaepernick and people are making a big stink about today, that's a wartime flag, and it is definitely indicative of people that serve in the military. That's why the people who served in the military, when they pass away, what do? They put that flag on the casket. If you didn't serve in the military, you don't have a right to have that because you had took an oath, you had swore to protect the country. So it's more of a military flag than it is that covers the whole country. And people might say, well, they protect the country, right? But just like a police officer does the same thing on different levels. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because you'll be amazed at what you will find if you just do a little research. We've got to upgrade, get past beliefs, and get into things that we really know. And a lot of people will say, well, it's heavy, this is heavy. No, it's superficial. It's superficial because it's been weighing down on us, because to really find the root to the problem and get to the source of what we need to do, you have to not just walk around with scratch the surface information. You got to dig. That's why you have to research. When they're going to build a new building or something, what do? They break ground. They dig. They get shovels out. And that's representation of we're going to reconstruct. And we have to reconstruct, not keep continuing to destruct. That means we got to break ground on things. And we have to destroy to build. We have to destroy old things, whether we have to gut them out or we have to totally just take the building down and rebuild it up. These are the things we have to do. And it's sad that so many people with all information out here is so lost in the sauce. And I call it the sauce because sauce is just the cover of what's really going on beneath. Because what has been perpetrated, unfortunately, in this country, and it's by religion, y'all. And there's no knock to your personal beliefs and your personal connection with your higher power. This is based on the instructions that were given. It was perpetrated a fraud from the beginning, a lie by religion, by the images of God, Christ, angels, and all this other stuff. So that talk about just Christianity, we got to get back to this. There's images that have already been placed out there. It's called the mark of the beast. And what I mean by the beast is they have taught through generations that the curse of Ham, which do a little research, you'll find that that was the curse, meaning of black people. And that was used in the movie, as we know, Birth of a Nation, speaking about Nat Turner. And it talks about a curse of Ham. It doesn't say curse of Ham, but they taught that. Because remember, we went for generations with the inability to try to even read. And when I say try to read, because by the time we got the book, it was in a language that we didn't have, we didn't know. And now we had to be taught by our oppressor, and now former and now present day oppressor, and he taught us this formula. And he made it seem that black was inferior and white was superior. And this is the reason why I say most people are prejudiced by default, even in your religion. Because you, if you do some research and you look at Genesis chapter 9, verse 20 through 26, it doesn't say the curse of Ham, Hammon, which means black. Look it up. It means the curse of Canaan. Go see who Canaan was and those 11 tribes. Then there's also a point in the Bible in Exodus chapter 4, verse 6 through 7, where it says Moses turned to the other flesh. He turned white, then turned back to the other flesh. So what if he turned white and then turned back to the other flesh, then what color was Moses? If y'all want to play that game. Revelation chapter 1, verse 14, describes the depiction of Jesus, if you need an image. And it said he had hair like wool, white wool. Europeans, whites don't have wool like hair. I'm sorry. Genetically, that's not true. That's just a lie. Now, they have tried to bred, and we've seen people, but I'm saying originally, no. They don't have wool like hair, but it goes deeper. It goes feet like fine brass. Or burnished brass, depending on what Bible you read, because there's so many different translations and mistranslations and misinterpretations. But brass, we know, is not white. And it says, as it burned and was refined in a furnace. So then what was Jesus? Then David has his father, who was, the second king of Israel, in the book of Solomon, says, I am black, but commonly, O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar. Go look that up. That's in your Bible. So, and we know David was the father of Solomon. So if Solomon was black, according to this Bible, and the second king of Israel was his daddy, okay, you see where I'm going? And then it goes deeper. It goes into Leviticus, the 13th chapter, and it talks about the curse, and it describes it. And you know what is in there? I don't mean to insult nobody. I ain't here to try to hurt nobody's feelings. But I'm here to correct what's wrong. By telling you what's right. It's in your Bible. Since you ascribe to it and you wholeheartedly believe it as the ultimate word of God, read Leviticus, the 13th chapter, and read about the curse of leploma, or they call Hansen's disease, or Hansen's disease called leprosy. It even goes far to say yellow thin hair is one of the / signs of the curse. So let's not play this curse game that people, the darker you are, you're cursed, and the lighter you are, you're more superior, and that you are better than somebody. Because even according to your book, the father Abraham was a Chaldean. Go look that up as well. And he was from a Semitic-speaking nation, tribe in Mesopotamia. They were black. So let's not play like we don't exist or we're not important in the whole circle of life. But that was perpetrated, a fraud and a lie, that we were the ones that carried the curse and that we were less educated and we was less this and less that. And you know what? So many bought into it. And even down to your cross, the original, that cross you wear today is not the original symbol of Jesus, they call him today. The original symbol of Christianity was a fish. Go look that up. That cross people are wearing today is a Roman and Greek form of capital punishment used all the way even back to Babylon. So people say, well, he died on the cross. I give you that, but it's not the original symbol. And Jesus didn't change things. Man changed things about Jesus. So I will truly, truly ask people, if you really want to know the truth, do your own independent research. And don't get caught up in the hype. Don't get caught up in the hearsay. of what they think say is real and true. Because there is an inner circle of people, a group of people, and you want to call them the bad boys, what you're going to do, what they're going to do when they come for you, hey, that's part of that. We know is the good old boy system, but they turned it inside out and made it us and flipped it, reversed it. And that's why you had groups in the 60s that would even say things as such as, and I know it's degrading, but they would call the police at that time pigs. What is a pig? It's a dirty, filthy animal that devours every and anything. And because of the corruption that was in the police department at that time, what they were doing. And then they went out and gave us different shows, whether it's Hawaii 5-0, whether it's Columbo or Columbus or Beretta. You know what a Beretta is. It's a 9mm United States Armed Force weapon used that's issued to soldiers. They even had a series called Perry Masons, because the Good Old Boy Network also is an extension of the Masons and the Masonic temples and their lodges. And the word police itself is from Middle French. It's not even English. And it's about public order and civil administration being governed by basically polis in the city. So we have been separated by this system that keeps us divided. And like what's happening right now, you know, and my thoughts and prayers go out to all those in the state of Texas who are being affected by the real master, Mother Nature, and her fury right now. Nobody cares if you're a Republican, Democrat, Muslim, Christian, Jew, agnostic, Joe Witness, Catholic, whatever. Let's get down to the root of our problem. We become inhumane, and we got to get back to the human factor, which is our true root as a people, and stop separating each other based on color, skin, genetic differences, ethnic differences, what area code you live in, what kind of money you make, what kind of car you drive, because that's just a form of the 5 points of exploitation, manipulation, suppression, domination, and control. And what's it doing? It's doing it to all of us. Because if we're being exploited, that means there's some kind of free labor going on. If we're being manipulated, yes, we've been manipulated through miseducation. Suppressed by information being suppressed. That's why when you go to court now, certain information is suppressed in the court of law. You think they did it in life itself. Dominated by way of fear. Police shouldn't have to go out there and fear citizens. Neither should citizens have to fear the police. If we understand we're on this planet together to be a servant to one another. And it leads to inferiority complexes, because superiority complex has been taught by a diabolical design and plan. And again, I said it's by default. So it's the miseducation of humanity. That's why in the big scheme of things, it's injustice to all, not justice for all. It's injustice to all. And that's why they send you to, which in Hebrew, the word is shul, S-H-E-O-L. It's shul, and it means hell. And it's causing hell. And if we don't upgrade and continue on the same old good old boy system, how are we going to keep people down and keep in control of people? We will continue to be deformed. Our way of thinking, our way of life will be threatened constantly, because we're acting now less than animals. And as Charlie said, if you got to stay on top of us by keeping your boots on our necks, so to speak, that's why you're going to constantly hear the songs, "We Shall Overcome," someday, one day. That day still hasn't come until we become servants of one another, be an ally to the police, and the police be an ally in our communities.
That's it.
Get away from this caste system. You're upper class, you're middle class, you're lower class. No, we're human class. Otherwise, we're black, Latino, white, trash, and just keep adding the trash. Let's have some class about ourselves when it comes to humanity, and be humane to one another. Because if we don't, we'll continue to create criminals, criminal-minded people. And criminal-minded people turn out to be monsters. And they ain't going to just haunt you in a nightmare, in a dream, or a nightmare when you go to sleep. When you wake up, you're going to see it. When you turn on your TV, you're going to see it. Because we're creating monsters out of this mindset to think I am better, you're better based on our position in life. The more power you have, use it to help people, empower them so they don't feel as inadequate, so they're not as depressed, so they don't feel like they are not valued. Value human life, all life, because that's what we are. We're all part of human life. Thank you, Stan.
Appreciate you, brother. Charlie, you got any final thoughts you want to throw in here? All right, I'm going to go to my 404 caller. I'm going to let you take us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Charlie.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm at a Tyrone was talking about education. Well, we are having a back-to-school giveaway for the kids in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I'm at Gospel White Community Church right now. So we got a bounce house here. We got some refreshments for the children, balloons. I believe there's going to be face painting. Come on down. Socialize in the Christian atmosphere. And that's basically all I got to say. It was a great show today, and I enjoyed dialoguing with you guys. And also, MVP is here, so he told me to tell you guys hello. But I will talk
right,
to you during the week, so God
time.
Bless.
Right,
I certainly will.
All right, 404 callers, man, I appreciate you coming in. Look here, man, I'm going to let you take us out. Give us some final thoughts on what you're feeling.
I'm not going to hold it long, man. I'm just going to say just real quick, I think everybody just needs to take whatever it is you've come up with as your idea for certain solutions, and whether it's a big problem or a small problem, just take it to the fullest, man. Try to solve that particular problem. Right or wrong, like we waste too much time arguing with each other about, hey, my plan. No. Just take your plan to its logical conclusion, take it as far as you can, and that good will be enough to benefit black folks. Don't try to take on this whole thing by yourself. It's way too big a burden. It's crushed many, many, many people who just decided that they were going to do it all by themselves. And as the brother was trying to say, I think, we just got to organize, like Kwame Ture used to say, man. Build with like minds and figure out what you can solve and keep it pushing, man. That is the only way, in my opinion. But if you think differently, you know what I mean, take it on, but just know what you're facing and don't end up somewhere, you know, with exhaustion and hating black folks because, you know, you get so frustrated trying to solve certain things. So, you know, Be aware of your own limitations, but also don't limit your horizon. So, you know what I mean? It's kind of a double speak saying, but I think it's real realistic. But, yeah, man, everybody, just do your best work.
All right, brother. We appreciate you, man. Make sure you let everybody in the 404 area know when you call up here, you're going to get time. You're going to have time to make your point. We're not going to hang up on you unless you hang up on yourself. But we appreciate you joining us. Interesting show, good perspective, good views. I want to thank Nick for calling in. Of course, Tyrone K. Dunmore, that's my ace in the bullpen. He's the host of Inspiring News that comes on Wednesdays, 7:30, 19:30 Central, that's 7:30 p.m., and 8:30 on the East Coast. Robert Velez does The Right Way, along with Charles Treadway III, and that's on Thursdays. And, of course, Drake's Media, Silent Words Unleashed, Sunday at 7 p.m. Central, 8 in the East, 6 in the West. You know, these brothers are putting out a lot of good knowledge, a lot of good things. You know, I'd like to thank everybody that called in, listened in, came in on Facebook Live and looked, you know, appreciate everybody. You know, I mean, we're just trying to come up with some solutions and having real talk that needs to be had today. You guys in Texas, you know, pray for us, especially down in South Texas with the hurricane. And, you know, hopefully people will be all right and we can get the utilities back up and get people the aid and assistance that they need. So once again, till next week, I appreciate you all. God bless and thanks for joining in.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.